The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
Yeah, you know how I was talking about over the weekend, a fire hose of news, and well, that certainly continues this morning out of the Trump administration. We'll be digging into some of that. Week three of breaking things and disrupting and breaking things in a positive way, as far as I'm concerned. Breaking the status quo for sure. We'll have a little conversation going on about that. And let me just touch on a couple of things this morning. Some weather-related, I haven't noticed a lot of problems in the weather as far as the valley right now. I'm seeing some fluffy rain when I was coming in, but as you get up in elevation, you're certainly seeing some snow on the roadways. I-5 certainly has icy and snowy conditions up on the Siskiyou Pass. I haven't checked 140, but I can just about assume that's going to be the same. We're going to have Mr. Outdoors on for a deeper dive on that next hour. In his Monday morning report here. We'll have all of that coming up. The only closures and delays that we have at this moment in time is Pinehurst School District 94. They're just on a delayed start. They're going to start at 10 this morning. And Butte Falls Charter School on a two-hour delayed. And I understand that up in Butte Falls there's going to be quite a bit of snow, I would imagine. Buses are running 2 hours late. Breakfast will not be served. All after-school activities and practice is canceled. That's all I have, you know, at this point in time. Looks like everybody else got to get out and engage in the drudgery. Also, a criminal headline worthy of note. They have a suspect in custody. Firearmed, strong-armed robbery of a Shady Cove business last night. This was at the Burgers and Brews restaurant. Guy accused of sticking that place up. Jackson County sheriffs and deputies, along with Eagle Point police, ended up going out there, Highway 62. They found the suspect just before 6 o'clock, Shady Cove Chevron, and there was a brief standoff, and they arrested the suspect, Jonathan Allen Roosh of Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, charged with first-degree robbery, menacing, and unlawful use of a weapon. And he's in Jackson County Jail right now. I find that interesting. We know Wisconsin guy accused of sticking up a burger place. It's kind of weird. Fortunately, nobody hurt, though. Don's here. Hello, Don. Good to have you. What's on your mind today?
Well, this is thrilling. So what's a fellow French heritage, LaRouche, doing in a Swedish neighborhood?
I don't know. I can't really answer that one, but we'll have to set that aside.
The exact context of what I need to address, because I'm inundated by the news everywhere, international, Sky News, uh-huh. American,
yeah.
That America is a nation of immigrants. Have you heard that line?
More times than I can count or appreciate, yes.
Okay, so share with me. Show me a nation, ancient or modern, that was indigenous. I'm saying that every nation is made up of migrants.
Well, and ultimately the population of that. It's like, you know, you say a nation of immigrants. All right, fine. My grandparents came like 1885, you know, is when they came here and slaved away in the coal mines in the early 1900s. You know, that's what they did.
Okay. My ancestors claim to be German, but more specifically, they were Saxon. Mm-hmm. And they did not come from Germany.
Yeah.
Because there was no Germany before 1871.
All right. And what is your point on this? Is this kind of like a pre-Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday complaint? You just wanted them to get rid of this nation of immigrants sort of stuff?
Oh, no. No, 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 no. Look, with the popularity of genetic companies like 23andMe or Heredity.com, mm-hmm. Ancestor.com, they're all very popular. So it's all a timing game. So when were your ancestors in a country that's name has changed three times in the last 150 years? Okay.
Yeah. I'm thinking about Slovenia for my relatives,
okay.
Right?
It used to be mm-hmm. called Bohemia.
Yeah.
But Bohemia caught bad press here because the Bohemians are anarchists. Oh, they're the artsy crowd, right?
Yep.
But they came from somewhere else. Also, if you look at Arthurian England, King Arthur probably was left over from the Romans with Hadrian's Wall.
And what is the point you're making here?
The point is, no one is indigenous.
Thank you.
That
also means even when we call our Native American indigenous population here in Southern Oregon and Northern California, correct?
Yes. The clinker to that was when they found Kennewick man by the Columbia.
And most likely a Viking, from what I understand, what I've been told by other scientists.
Yeah.
That's the suspicion, but the tribes did not want that Viking, Kennewick man, Viking thing. Wait a minute. We're not supposed to be any...
No, he's sacred.
Yeah, but, exactly.
And we cannot really pick our ancestors. So I am African-American, like Elon Musk.
You're very funny. I always appreciate that, Don. Thank you for the call, all right? We'll catch you later. All right. 770-5633, 770-KMED. All right. Speaking of who's indigenous, who belongs here, who ain't supposed to be here. I remember when I was growing up as a kid, there was that song, Signs, right? Large crowd gathered in downtown Los Angeles on Sunday in response to the recent increase in ICE raids and deportations. This happened not only in downtown Los Angeles, it happened yesterday in Salem. In Salem, you had a bunch of illegal immigration supporters and also Mexican nationalists out there waving flags. They were out there by the state legislature, by the Capitol. They were blocking traffic, doing all the rest of it. And as police were driving away, they were sitting there and banging on the windows of the police cars. I don't know if anybody was arrested or not. Annie Ngo was reporting on the Salem aspect of it. So, yeah, you have actually supporters of criminal aliens here protesting in Salem. Mexican nationalists. They don't want ICE deporting anybody. Now, there's a more complete version of the quote or my take on it, but it just ends with, "and the borough you rode in on." I think we'll just leave it at that. Just leave it at that. We have other news from the fire hose of information also coming up. This is the Bill Meyer Show.
Ready to up?
Buggy Rap Lab.
Hi, I'm Steve Potter, body shop manager of Lithia Body and Paint, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
618. By the way, a little side note to the Mexican nationalists and illegal immigration supporters that were protesting in L.A. and also Salem. I think they were doing this in Seattle, too. Is that... Tom Homan announcing that more than 7,400 criminal aliens were arrested over the last few days. Border crossings down about 93%. 93%. Just absolutely amazing. Now, also down about 93%, marijuana prices. Okay, it's not that much, but Oregon Live reporting this morning. Oregon's marijuana market continued to deteriorate last year, prices falling to an all-time low, even as the state's harvest hit a record high. Well, you know what you call that? It's a supply and demand. Lots of supply, less demand, I guess. It is a chronic imbalance that only got worse last year, the Oregon Live crew writes, putting even more pressure on a struggling industry. The state's supply of marijuana nearly doubled consumer demand for the product. It's according to the OLCC, which is the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission, right? The oversupply of usable marijuana on the market, along with lower prices, continues to strain marijuana businesses, the commission wrote in its annual report on the state's marijuana industry. The industry's predicament is well understood. Marijuana grows abundantly in Oregon, but the state has a relatively small population, and the federal government doesn't allow cannabis to be sold across state lines. Prices stay low because Oregon has a marijuana surplus every year. Okay, so apparently we have a lot of marijuana farmers that do not understand supply and demand, most likely because they're consuming their own product, I guess. So this is supposed to be a serious problem, according to Oregon Live. So we have that story going on. This is an interesting story. This is going back to the FedGov again. The day before the official start of Black History Month in the United States, this reported in taskandpurpose.com, by the way. So in other words, the day before the start of Black History Month in the U.S., the U.S. Department of Defense canceled and blocked any celebration of Black History Month and any other identity months. Wow. You know, when they talk about DEI going away and they want the military to be out there learning how to blow up and break things that need blown up and break and broken, rather, they meant it. Yeah, this was from Pete Hegseth. January 31st release from the new Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, declaring identity months are dead at the Department of Defense. By the way, this means no more, you know, six-month celebration of Pride Month in the military, in which it was considered a requirement for your job to be a dude in a dress, you know, that kind of thing, and everyone's supposed to be celebrating that. But anyway, Pete Hegseth, on his order directive, argues that the efforts to divide the force, to put one group ahead of another, erodes camaraderie and threaten mission execution. Therefore, it's blocking any official commemoration or celebration of cultural awareness and heritage months, such as Black History Month, Asian American, and or Pacific Islander Heritage Month. And going forward, Department of Defense and military will not use official resources to include man hours to host any celebrations or event related to cultural awareness months. It's absolutely amazing. That's wonderful. It's exactly what had to happen. This whole idea that, everything except being a good, cohesive fighting force, they was wasting time and money on it. That's done. Now then, a little more information coming out on the Blackhawk striking the American Airlines flight of the other day. Remember that one in D.C.? Defense One reporting this morning, the deadly January 29th helicopter crash outside Washington, D.C. was the Army's first serious aviation incident in months, but it came on the heels of a fiscal year that saw the service's highest rate of serious crashes in over a decade. This is an amazing story, really. Army aviation saw 17 Class A mishaps, that is, accidents that killed someone or caused more than $2.5 million in damage during fiscal year 2024, which ran from October 2023 through September of last year. 13 of those crashes had taken place just since last year, a year ago, since the last year. It's a year that, this is a quote here, it's a year that Army Aviation looks back on in hopes of never repeating, the Army Combat Readiness Center said in a damning annual assessment released just days before the mid-air collision near Reagan National Airport, killed 64 and 3 on the Blackhawk. The accident has elevated to a national tragedy the type of training accidents that rarely make headlines at a time when Army Aviation is trying to rebuild its safety culture. And now in this circumstance, it just seems to be a tragic incident of two aircraft trying to occupy the same space at the same time. But I don't see this adding to the trend, according to Jonathan Koiziol, Chief of Staff for the Army's Headquarters Aviation Directorate, telling reporters. So that is a very interesting story, that the look from the military aircraft world had been looking bad in the first place. And so maybe if they do a few celebrating, a little less celebrating of certain history months and, you know, which flags were going to fly over the military bases, et cetera, and actually get back into doing real training, maybe they will have less of that going on. I think Pete Hegseth is going to have a really, really good influence on this one. All right. We also have just the amazing story. Let's see if I can find this one. Like I said, I just have so many stories. It's kind of like trying to figure out what we're going to go to next. Oh, yeah. Yeah, here we go. Panama's president vowing yesterday to end a key development deal with China, after getting together with Secretary of State Marco Rubio. This is reported in Fox News. And after a whole bunch of complaints from President Donald Trump that the country had ceded control over its critical canal to Beijing. Now, Panama's president said his nation's sovereignty over the waterway will remain unchanged, but he said he would not renew a 2017 Memorandum of Understanding to join China's Belt and Road Global Development Initiative. So they're pulling out from that, and that Panama would instead look to work more closely with the United States The other part about this this deal is that he is not going to, he being a Panama's president, will not be charging U.S. warships to use the Panama Canal, which they were. And I guess he's kind of seeing the writing on the wall that this is just not going to work out. This is not going to play well in the United States of America. And so they're going to get out of the Chinese deal. And Trump is still talking about seizing control of it, though, even in spite of this. So I don't know if that'll be enough to cut the deal or not. But like I said, just amazing stuff going on. Now, the big financial news over the weekend had to do with Elon Musk. And because of what Elon Musk and others were doing there as part of Doge, stock markets are looking pretty shaky at the moment. Gold's gone up to about 2810. Yeah, gold is churning higher. But this is about the imposition of tariffs, rather, 20-25% tariffs on Canada, on Mexico. The markets don't like this kind of stuff. President Trump is saying that this is something that will have some hurt, but that will have longer-term gains. That's why he's looking to do this. Now, back to what Elon Musk was doing, though. Elon Musk, during an hour-long, this is, by the way, reported from no friend of the Trump administration, that's Axios, okay? They're calling it Musk's wrecking ball. Yeah. Elon Musk, during an hour-long Spaces conversation on X that began just after midnight this morning, said President Trump has agreed to shut down the U.S. Agency for International Development. Elon Musk calling this beyond repair, a bowl of worms with no apple. And Musk says, we're shutting it down. Trump talking to reporters last night, suggesting a final decision hadn't yet been made. But he said, USAID is run by radical lunatics and we're getting them out and then we'll make a decision. Now, shortly before 10 a.m. Eastern, or I'm sorry, 1 a.m. Eastern, be 10 o'clock our side, agency employees in Washington got an unusual staff-wide email telling them to work from home on Monday rather than come into headquarters. This is the latest example of Musk and the cost-slashing allies. And Musk isn't the only force. And remember, this is not from a friendly news source. This is Axios. I always like to look and see what they're saying. But Musk isn't the only force driving the Trump administration's escalating purge of civil servants, but his fingerprints are everywhere and his methods are unlike anything the federal government has ever seen. Now, United States Aid, USAID, U.S. Aid for International Development. This is one of those globalist snake pit kind of things. My boss, George, and I were talking about it. We're just kind of, you know, laughing about it a little bit. It's the kind of place in which a $500 million to train camels to speak English in Tunisia. You know, that kind of, maybe not specific, but, you know, kind of along that kind of line. This is where you hear about the crazy kind of grant stream funding that the United States taxpayers would shovel into the radical left-wing globalist demands to do this. USAID would do other things, stuff that I recall, crazy things like pushing the LGBTQ agenda in Saudi Arabia or Yemen or some radical Muslim state. And yeah, we need to go in there and train people to be accepting of the LGBTQ agenda, which is not particularly real profit, you know, very popular rather in the Muslim world. But they do stuff like that all the time. That's what USAID was all about. And essentially, it appears to be shut down. And Elon's also gotten access to secret parts of the treasury codes and things so they can do a better job of using artificial intelligence, really, in finding out where the money is really going. And I got to tell you, this is the sort of story which is just generating hissy fits everywhere, because this is that secret. You can really call it deep statey stuff, which is done. You have people within these organizations that laugh. They didn't care who was president. They were going to sit there and take the taxpayers' money and the grant stream funding and do with it as they wish. And that's being ripped out. Now, between that and the deals for a lot of people to quit the federal government, which I think today is one of the deadlines for a lot of the, I think this is for a bunch of FBI people. Oh, no. I'm sorry. There's so much news trying to keep it straight, even as I'm, spitballing with you this morning. I think that we have to have FBI people submitting what they were doing when it came to investigating Trump and or January 6th, because there were so many big questions about that. They have to submit that this morning. And obviously, this is going to be leading to some more purges of people that needed to probably go away a long time ago. In other words, we're going to start getting rid of ideologues within the job and go back to people actually doing the job and, enforcing the law. Enforcing the law and Federal Bureau of Investigation investigating. Doing a good job of investigating, but not just investigating your political enemies. But, of course, Trump doing this, of course, is killing his political enemies, which needs to happen. It needs to be, you need to have a balanced thumb on the scale. Well, ideally, you wouldn't have any thumbs on the scale, but that's not the way this works, okay? Anyway, there we go. 6:32, the fire hose continues. This is the Bill Myers Show, and you're on KMED.
Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
6:36, Edward Bartlett joins me. Wanted to get him on, and we wanted to talk about the plight of mostly men. Anytime that any sort of accusation, whether it's of sexual impropriety or domestic violence, all sorts of other things, how on college campuses, it's been young men that have mostly been having to bear the brunt and not really getting much fairness or due process on college campuses. And he's the founder of SAVE, an organization which is focused on fixing this kind of stuff. Edward, it's great to have you on. So kind of cold and chilly in Maryland where you're hanging out this morning, huh? Welcome.
Yes, it is chilly, but, there's always hope of a warmer and brighter day tomorrow.
Well, certainly in this particular situation, when it comes to protecting a young man, or at least just having a fair shake anytime you're going up before colleges. Tell us a little bit about SAVE first off. And by the way, what is your website so people can go out and find more about you? I've been talking to you off and on for years.
Yeah, sure, Bill. So it's the website is SAVEServices.org. Mm-hmm. SAVEServices.org. We are the people who have been we've been fighting for due process, especially on college campuses, going all the way back to 2011 when in the Obama administration. And many people are not clear what due process really means. Well, due process is a basket of rights or protections to protect people from false accusations. It includes being informed what is the specific nature of the allegation,
right,
being given adequate time to prepare one's defense, being told who is the person making the accusation. It's a whole series of due process rights, and surprise, surprise, the leftists and the Marxists in our midst are trying to erode those due process rights, especially on college campuses.
And what has been going on for a number of years, I would imagine, especially through some of these fads such as Believe All Women, that was a good one, right? If a woman said something, that it had to be believed, unless it was an accusation against a left-wing person that was very popular, then you couldn't believe that woman, right?
This is all driven by Marxist ideology. Let's be very clear about that. So there's all kinds of contradictions and lack of science, and it just goes on and on. But that's the reality of the Marxist ideology and how it's come to permeate, especially on college campuses. But that said, I want to tell you about the extraordinary victory that we celebrated, our organization celebrated in early January. You may have heard that the Biden administration was pushing this new radical Title IX regulation. Title IX is the law to ensure gender equality, fairness for men and women in schools. So Biden had pushed this radical new regulation that did not only remove due process for the accused, but also redefined the meaning of sex. So it's, transgender, removed key parental rights, allowed men to participate in women's sports. You name it. It was so radical. Anyway, so here's the great news. January the 9th, a month ago, Judge Danny Reeves in Kentucky issued a ruling that vacated this horrible regulation, not just in Kentucky, but in the entire United States.
And this is something that got a little bit of play at the time, but I think there was such a focus in the lead up to the new incoming presidential administration that it kind of got lost in the shuffle, didn't it, almost, in some ways?
I think you're really right. But, you know, this was truly a monumental victory for parents, for adolescents who are, you know, questioning their identity, for female athletes, for falsely accused male students. The sweep of this regulation was really breathtaking.
You know what was also interesting? I was looking at some of the notes that I got from your rep before we had our conversation this morning, and they were also indicating another growing trend, which is welcome to see that there's a growing army of women that are saying, "Hey, there's been a real problem here. There's been a real lopsided approach on college campuses, and it may be just dealing with men in the culture in general." And we're kind of being allies to try to restore some just common sense balance to all of this. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go back to the Marxist narrative. The Marxist narrative is always trying to pit one group against another group. So in this case, trying to, you know, convince women about the big bad patriarchy and how it's trying to deprive women of their rights.
And by the way, Edward, think about how wonderful that is for the other left-wing ideology of reducing family formation and the creation of families and births.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, it all ties together into a semi-coherent narrative. So anyway, but you know, the majority of women don't believe there's such a thing as patriarchy. The majority of women love and respect and care for men. And so that's why we are seeing many women supporting, in this case, due process rights for men. And I'll just give an example that when Betsy DeVos was the secretary of the Department of Education, she was the one who spearheaded this regulation, Title IX regulation in 2020, that restored due process rights to the falsely accused. So she's just one of many, many women who stood up and said, this is pure nonsense.
Because you also have many, many of these women who have sons. And they would look at this and see, no, wait a minute, my son is evil just by nature of being male, right? That kind of thing. And you can understand why you know, a mother's love would want things to be fair, if anything were to ever happen to him.
Well, you're totally right. And we're not only seeing this in the U.S., we're seeing this internationally. We're seeing,
really?
You know, we do work, we do this kind of stuff on the international level, especially in the area of domestic violence. And if I can digress a second, just 2 weeks ago, there was a major decision handed down by the High Court of Delhi, India. It was written by a female judge who wrote, quote, "Men who face violence at the hands of their wives encounter unique hurdles, including societal disbelief and stigma." Needless to say, this female judge ruled in favor of the male victim who had been assaulted by his wife. So,
yeah, I was looking here in that story. There, the woman had poured boiling water on her husband's face and chest, and of course, and. Now, the thing is, though, I will say that India has a culture that has tended to not to create or treat women very kindly. Let's be, you know, honest about this. But at the same time, when men would have domestic violence committed against them, there was a lot of stigma involved with this, right? And, oh, that didn't happen this way. It couldn't have happened the way you're saying. You must have done something. You must have deserved it. Would that be a fair assessment of what a lot of men have faced in today's judicial process?
Yeah, exactly. Or you must have done something to provoke her.
Yes.
You must have said, I mean, the excuses go on and on to the point of being laughable. But yeah, I mean, but bottom line, male victims of domestic violence, whether in the U.S. or elsewhere, they have a lot of trouble being believed. They have a lot of trouble getting help. And so, yeah, this is sort of a major issue.
And over how many years did that trend start in which And believe me, there was a time that I think that that women were not looked at seriously in domestic violence cases and such. But then it seemed like over, what was it, 10 or 20 years, you know, a guy just could not get a decent shake, you know, you're in court on domestic violence, or you're in family court, especially here, Edward, yeah. And forget about it. You know, you're guilty of having testosterone in your bloodstream, and so you are guilty. You're not going to get the kids, and you're certainly not going to you're certainly not going to get custody of the children, and you will certainly also not be believed in a domestic violence trial. Are we starting to get back to more of a sense of balance between the extremes?
Bill, you've described the problem perfectly. You took the words out of my mouth almost. The problem goes all the way back to 1994. That's when the Federal Violence Against Women Act was passed by Congress at the behest of Joe Biden, I might add.
He's the gift that keeps giving bad gifts. Just a long time this has been going on, right? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, but, you know, to be clear, all the research shows women are as likely to be domestic abusers as men. Just this morning, I read about a woman in New York City who stabbed and killed her husband. That was just in this morning's news. So you know, when we're talking about domestic violence by women, we're not talking about a, quote, innocent slap on the face. We're talking about serious, sometimes life-threatening incidents. So, yeah, this is, you know, again, this is the Marxist narrative that goes all the way back to 1994 and beyond.
Is this something which is being codified, an attack on the Violence Against Women? You know, you'd think it'd be just good enough to have the Violence Against Family Members Act rather than Violence Against Women. But I say this as someone, and I don't know if I told you last time we had a conversation, many years ago, I ended up, I don't consider myself a victim. I'm not sitting around here dwelling like, oh, woe is me. You know, I was a victim. But, you know, listen, I was, clocked with, I was clocked with a crowbar in a domestic violence incident a number of, of years ago, right? Clocked in the head a couple of times, bruised and beat up and banged up and everything else. And the court system in Minnesota and North Dakota at that time, I think it was Minnesota that we ended up going into, it's like it didn't matter. And all that mattered, the mother was just like, well, you know, it was a stressful time. And it really was one of those things like you must have done something to provoke her and you're the problem. You know, it's what it's like, wait a minute. You know, and that was 25 years ago. All right. 25 years ago that this ended up happening. And is it finally getting better? Because I remember the frustration I felt like you felt at that. And I knew that if I had done it to her at that time, that I just would have, you know, I would have been in jail and I would have lost my job. I probably would have had all sorts of other things happen. It was amazing the way it was treated.
Yeah. Well, let me be clear. Being hit with a crowbar is not a minor, you know, quote, innocent slap on the face.
If you hear me stuttering, it's probably a leftover a bit of damage. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have to use the word victim because that's sort of a loaded word. But,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's a perfect example. We're not talking about trivial stuff. We're talking about things that are really, you know, are serious injuries or can cause. So you asked, has it gotten better? People who have been through, you mentioned family court, and my friends who have been through family court will say adamantly, it has not gotten better one bit.
I was concerned about that. I had a feeling that was going to be the case.
It's gotten worse because the definition of domestic violence has been expanded to include what's called coercive control. Now, coercive control is things like gossiping and, you know, haranguing your partner. But that's now part of the definition of domestic violence. Now, if you are accused or if I am accused of coercive control, there's essentially no way to refute it because unless you're videotaping, you know, all of your discussions, there's no way to refute the allegations.
So, yeah, it becomes he says, she says, vice versa, right? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So in family courts, I think, you know, if anything has gotten worse, but in criminal courts, I think it's fair to say that judges more often are, you know, handling these cases in a fair way. Not always, but more often than they used to.
That's good.
And I have to say the media is reporting these cases more often than they used to. So I think overall that the tide is shifting, but we still have a long way to go.
What would it take, in your opinion? By the way, I'm speaking with Edward Bartlett. He's the founder of SAVE, an organization focused on fairness and due process on college campuses. And what would it take to reform family court? Because family court seems to be a, it's just a snake pit. It really has been a snake pit, and I've heard from mostly men, but I've also heard women that are given a raw deal in this too. But it seems mostly men still. And is there any way to reform this to actually truly make it a gender neutral experience there? Because it is not right now, arguably.
So, Bill, these are the three recommendations I would have to fix the corrupt family courts. Number one, we need to start with a presumption of equal shared parenting, a presumption of 50-50 shared parenting.
Presumption.
We know
okay.
that's the best for the kids. Kids do much better when they have, extensive contact with both parents. Number two, we need to not allow persons to make allegations of domestic violence, unless they have physical or actual hard proof, right? And number three, when people make false allegations, there should be some consequence, some penalty, some fine, possibly incarceration. So those are my three recommendations how to fix family court.
What do you think about the pretty well-established legal trend that if someone's going to file for divorce, one of the first things they do is the attorney will tell you, okay, go and file for a restraining order, because it almost seems like you're wanting to set the game space, so to speak. Would you agree with me on that? How that tends to work a lot of times?
Yeah, you're establishing a precedent in the judge's mind by saying, yeah, I am a victim I'm at risk of becoming a victim of domestic violence.
Right. And whoever gets the restraining order first is looked at more favorably in the court proceedings.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's called the silver bullet. And yes, it can have a devastating effect and ultimately on kids, because again, kids need both parents in order to thrive.
I appreciate what you're doing over at SAVE, and anything to make just the minefield of interpersonal relationships. I mean, it was a minefield even before the federal government and the state started getting so involved in this. But when you would get to this situation where, you would be... Now, this is kind of where I'm going with this, Edward. Instead of having internal investigations in either school districts or in colleges, and then they have administrative hearings in which they kind of put... the kangaroo court in which they put... mostly the men, sometimes the women on trial. If there's a crime, shouldn't you just turn it over to the police? What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, you are not the first person to make that suggestion, and I agree with it. It does seem pretty ridiculous. If we're talking about a criminal, an allegation of criminal activity, hey, why aren't we turning this over to the people who are experts on investigations?
Why haven't we been turning them over to the police in many cases?
Well, at the risk of repeating myself, it's the Marxist ideology that says the more men that we can kick out of college, that means there's just more space for women. And that's the feminist ideology. That's the feminist goal.
Yeah, but they already dominate college campuses, even right now.
They do, but there's still... 42% males,
that's too many. Okay, got it. All right.
And that's to the feminist ideology. That's 42% too many.
All right.
And I'm trying not to be too ridiculous, but I think there's a grain of truth to that point.
Edward, I appreciate your time this morning and sharing the good news and still some of the work that needs to be done. All right, Edward Bartlett, founder of SAVE, SAVEservices.org. It's an organization focused on fairness and due process on college campuses, but you also get involved in these other aspects of the male-female relationship when it comes to the law. All right, Edward, thanks so much. Anything else you want to add before we take off, and maybe something that you're working on right now or a future project? Just want to make sure.
Well, yeah, there's, I don't want to take up another half hour for discussion, but yeah, we are very active on the international scope. Just this past Thursday, we went to New York City. We met with staffers from four missions, and this, what I'm going to tell you is going to blow you away. The staffers from the mission of Russia fully understood what we were saying and full agreement. So we found friends in unexpected places.
Interesting. Well, stay in touch. We'll have you back, Edward. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Good to chat with you.
Indeed. You know, you just want everybody to be fair and equal before the law. All right. That's all. Something pretty simple. Harder in progress, in process, rather, I guess. It's a 656 at KMED.
This is Brent with Home and Built Deck and Fence. Many customers in the Rogue Valley ask why winter is a great time for deck, fence, and siding projects. The answer? Faster scheduling, quicker completion, and better prices than next spring. Don't wait. Schedule your free consultation now. Home and Built provides top-notch design, quality craftsmanship, and exceptional service. You work hard year-round, and so do we. Visit homeandbuilt.com to see our work. That's HOMANBUILT.com. Home and Built. We build the best and fix the rest.
656. I ended up getting my renewal for my car insurance, and I opened up the envelope a few weeks ago because they're always going to say, okay, here it comes, and we're going to auto. I pay it every 6 months. I just got to the point where I think I'm better off. It's always more expensive when you end up paying it monthly. But I ended up getting it through Sky Park Insurance, skyparkins.com, by the way. And I got it, and I was gingerly opening up the envelope. And it's like, okay. And I actually breathed a sigh of relief. It's not always been that way, right? You know how that is going on. And I said, okay, three cars is $444. Three cars, two drivers, full coverage, $444, right? And now that's just for me. I have no tickets. And we're both good drivers. We don't have any problems, and we have older, cheap cars, right? So I just want to understand that if you have a brand new car, it's probably going to cost you more. But I look at $444. I just breathe a sigh of relief. It went up maybe $20 over the prior 6 months, but I can look at that as a bit of inflation. But that was all done through the help of Steve Yancey at Sky Park Insurance. He's an independent insurance agent who works with many different companies. And ended up working out really well for me. Helps out at my home and various other. I even have earthquake coverage on my house, too, just in case. Of course, if we end up having that big of an earthquake that I have to collect, I don't know. I guess we have bigger problems. But we'll set that aside. If you're looking for someone who's going to go to bat for you, especially in Senate Bill 762 time, get in touch with them today. 261-5444. 261-5444. 261-5444. Or skyparkins.com.
At Skypark. We make insurance easy.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is your tonneau cover source. Tonneau covers are a great way to secure and protect the cargo in your bed from the elements. Styles from Truck Gear, Mack Industries, Undercover, and more. Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, your one-stop accessory and protection shop.
For reliable well water services, look no further than Siskiyou Pump Service and Rotary Drilling Company. From well drilling and water testing to well pump installations, holding tanks, and water filtration, you'll get complete service without juggling multiple contractors and multiple phone calls. Just one call, one company, one complete trusted solution. Your partner for well water system installation and maintenance from field to faucet is Siskiyou Pump Service and Rotary Drilling Company. Rest easy knowing your well water is in expert hands.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Now Bill wants to hear from you. 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
Shade before 7 o'clock at KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. We're still going to have a conversation here with Mr. Outdoors, because it looks like the snow doesn't seem to be hitting the valleys very hard. Like I said, I had a little bit of fluffy rain coming in, but that was about the extent of it. But certainly in the higher pass levels up at Crater Lake, walls of snow have fallen over the weekend here, and it just kept raining and raining. Let me take a look at Oregon 62. What's it looking like over at 140, it's kind of wet with some smoosh on the road. But, boy, Interstate 5, Siskiyou Summit, that is looking pretty dicey at the moment. We'll talk with Mr. Outdoors all about this and get you set up and do a early week version. We have Dr. Dennis Powers joining me for Where Past Meets Present a little bit after 8 o'clock this morning, and plenty of time for your calls this morning also, okay? So we'll have that all coming up, Town Hall News in a flash, and then let's dig into what's happening.
Short and